going to talk today about from the third and fourth chapters of the book of Ruth. If you've been with us the last couple of weeks, you don't need a recap, but if you're here today for the first time, it would be helpful to know where we're at in the scriptures. So let me just tell you, there was a man by the name of Elimelech who had a wife named Naomi, who had two sons. There was famine in the land of Bethlehem, Judah, and so Elimelech, the father, decided, let's go to Moab, probably the one worst place you could go. They had food there, so that meant sense to him, and so they go to Moab. We find out through history that Moab became an enemy of Israel because of the wilderness journey with Moses, and God held them in account for that. Well, while they're there, the husband dies. Naomi's husband, Elimelech, dies. Her two sons marry women of Moab, and 10 years later, while they're still there, the two husbands die. So there's two weddings and three funerals in the space of 10 years. Anybody will tell you that's a lot of stress to go through. Naomi tells her daughter-in-laws, you just stay right here, get you another husband. But there was one of the daughter-in-laws says, no, wherever you go, I'm going to go. Wherever you're going to lodge, I'm going to lodge. I will be with you. Her name was Ruth. So we finally come to somebody whose name actually matches the book, Ruth. And Ruth says, go back to Bethlehem with you. And Naomi and Ruth return back to their homeland of Bethlehem, Judah. It just so happens that the second chapter ends with their arrival. And we talked about the providence of God last week, how that there's really no getting lucky. There's really no, hey, you're very fortunate. There is a coincidence. No, it's the providence. It's the hand of God that moves in our lives when we see it and when we don't. And God's hand is moving here in chapter 2. And they come back right at harvest time. I find that amusing that they left because there was no harvest. And when they return after three deaths and two marriages, they have a harvest time. But it's at harvest time that chapter 3 opens up. There is a passage that kind of sets the tone for chapters 3 and 4, and it is verse 23 of chapter 2. So she stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean unto the end of barley harvest and wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law. So Ruth is participating in the gleaning and the harvesting of the field, and we talked a little bit about what that meant last week, how that God set up the corners of the field and what fell off the wagons of the field, and that's for the poor and the needy. Today, we're going to talk about a kinsman redeemer. It was a custom. If you were here 2 weeks ago, we passed out an extra study sheet to identify a lot of the customs and traditions that they had. And so God had assigned each family of the nation of Israel a portion of land. Each tribe belonged to a certain area of the promised land, and each family in each tribe were given some land. And that land was precious. That land was to be guarded. It was to be kept in the family. So Ruth now comes back without a husband. And the provisions was that there could be the next of kin that could marry the widow, have children if she didn't have children, and they would keep the land. That was God's way of keeping the land in the same family. So Naomi has no children. There are no heirs, but she has a daughter-in-law. So it was the responsibility. How many of you have ever heard of Sadie Hawkins? Is that so old-fashioned that it's ever done before? remember being in a youth camp up in Colorado, and we had a Sadie Hawkins night. And that afternoon, we put all the guys out on the baseball field and the girls in the foul line. And on our whistle, the girls would go chase the guy and get a date for that night's banquet. And we had guys climbing trees, jumping fences. They were not going to be caught. To them, it was a competition of nobody's going to catch me. They could have cared less about who they went to the banquet with. Well, this is an old-fashioned Sadie Hawkins, because it was up to the daughter-in-law of the family to go to the next of kin in the family and ask for his hand in marriage. She initiated it. Just backwards, I hope, from our tradition. So that was the kinsman redeemer. He had to be asked to be wedded to this lady. It was not up for him to decide. And so, as any good mother-in-law would do, when her son dies, she's going to play the matchmaker. You ever played that, where you've got another, two of your friends, you've finagled every which way you could and got them together? In our church, back when we first came here, there was a friend of ours that was in our youth department from Sulphur Springs, and he had come here, and there was a girl in our church that was here when I got here, and Judy played the matchmaker, and we got him to go to a Ranger game with us. And I forget who it was, but one of them stayed on the phone, and in those days there was no cell phone, okay? So the phone was actually a telephone booth. Was it Donna or was it Mike that stayed on the phone? Donna, yeah. Anyway, they ended up getting married, so she's batting 1,000 right now, one for one. Watch it when she matches you up, you might get in trouble. Naomi plays the matchmaker, chapter 3. Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter," and she's speaking to Ruth, "shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you?" Basically what she is saying here, am I going to have to do this for you? It's time. You need to get out there. You need to seek him out. She's already found him in chapter 2. "Now Boaz, whose young women you were with, is he not our relative?" I mean, he is the guy. "In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor." Don't you think it's strange that this widow lady knows where this guy is at midnight? She's the matchmaker, and that's what matchmakers do. And she is saying, this conversation here is going on with Naomi and Ruth, "You need to get out there. As a matter of fact, we've already found Boaz. We know who the kinsman redeemer is. You need to go out there and get to where he's at." Oh yeah, by the way, he's over here by the threshing floor. And the threshing floor was used for two things. One thing it was used for was to harvest to separate the seed from the chaff. And that's what the threshing floor was for. But it was also a place of celebration. If you had a great harvest, then you had a party. When all those who worked in your field and those in your family, you sat together and you celebrated. Naomi knew the harvest was great, that the party would be exceptional. And who's going to be in the best of moods? It's going to be Boaz. He's got a great harvest. He's got bundles and bundles and bundles and more bundles than he needs of grain, and he is up there. It's time. He's got the right attitude. So when you go, you know ahead of time, you got a pretty good chance. Right timing. Verse 4. "Shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies. And you shall go in and uncover his feet and lie down. and he will tell you what you should do. A little odd, especially when we read that in our day about, you know where he went to bed? You go lay down right beside him. We, with our minds, take off. We're like, what in the world? But there was nothing suggestive here. And we need to understand, this was their tradition. This was their way of saying, here I am, and I'm asking for your hand in marriage. I know it's probably not the way you got engaged, hopefully, but that's the way they did it in the Old Testament. In verse 9, in some translations, it says, you spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a close relative. Ruth had to be schooled in this, but Boaz knew exactly what was happening and what she was doing, and by the way, what she was asking. Boaz, let's back up, was a good guy. He saw her back in chapter 2 and wanted to know who she was, who she belonged to. He knew, we're related, and he knew to protect her. He said, listen, I don't want you going to any other field to glean. I want you to stay right in my place. When you go to eat, I want you to come with my workers. I don't want you to stay with just everybody else. I want you to come to a special place. So Boaz was already down that road a little ways. And now Ruth does the entreating. She does the inviting. And verse 5 says, she said to her, all that you say to me, I will do. Ruth, Naomi here, your instructions, I'm going to go follow. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law instructed her. And after Boaz had eaten and drank, and his heart was cheerful, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came softly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. And it happened at midnight that the man was startled and turned himself, and there a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, who are you? And she answered, I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative. She is saying in our vernacular, will you marry me? Will you take me under your wing? That was custom. It was necessary according to the kinsman redeemer tradition for the bride or the expectant bride to be, was to ask the husband to be. Verse 10. Blessed are you, O of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request, for all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman. So here are two people of good character. In verse 12, now, it is true that I am close relative. However, there is a closer relative than I. There's a relative closer than I. Boaz had been checking this thing out. He had been doing homework, and he found out in the family tree there's one guy that stands between me marrying Ruth. And that one guy has to be dealt with. So he says in verse 13, stay this night, in the morning it shall be that if he will perform the duty of a close relative for you, good, let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty for you. As the Lord lives, lie down until morning. Now, just because we, is probably 95%, think when we read this, hanky-panky took place. Because that's the way we are. But in her day, it's not going to be everybody 100% knew. No hanky-panky took place. There will always be that. You see where Ruth went last night? She didn't come home this morning. Wonder what? There will always be those people in society who want to believe what they want to believe. So notice what Boaz does. Stay the night, lie down until morning, verse 14. So she lay at his feet until morning, and she arose before one could recognize another. That's a way of saying it's still dark. And he says, do not let it be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. The way they talk in third person. I guess that's King James in there. Do not let it be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. Also he said, bring the shawl that is on you and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 ephahs of barley and laid it on her. Then she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, is that you, my daughter? Then she told him all that the man had done for her. And she said, these 6 ephahs of barley he gave me, for he said to me, do not go empty-handed to your mother-in-law. And she said, sit still, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out, for the man will not rest until he has concluded the matter this day. Here's what Boaz, on his game. He's going to say, listen, when get up early and you go home under the guise of night, there will still be those that can't wait to start talking. So you're going to be carrying some food home. And it will appear to them, you came here for food. You take it back to your mother-in-law, Naomi. And he covers that little situation that could get a little dicey. She comes home to Naomi. And Naomi says, all right, great. I'm glad you did exactly all of this. I'm glad that Boaz did this. Now let's just wait. And she says something there at the end of the chapter that's important for us. This is our kind of first takeaway from the story. Set still until you know how the matter will turn out. For the man will not rest until he has concluded the matter this day. Our takeaway from chapter 3 is this. When God gives you hope, when God delivers into your life an opportunity, you need to respond. You don't need to just sit there and wait. You don't need to sit there and watch. When God gives us hope, he expects a response from us. When he wants to promote us, he expects a response. And the times when we will not respond, he will move on to bless somebody else. You need to be able to hear the voice of God. You need to be able to see the hand of God, that when it moves, you react. You respond in kind. Naomi and Ruth were watching the hand of God and reacted with faith. You ever watch the movie Rudy? Know what I'm talking about? It's about a guy growing up somewhere up north wanting to go to Notre Dame, and his parents and his dad in particular. You'll never make it. And the whole movie is about him persevering through to the point. He didn't have the grade points. He didn't have the averages that he needed. He went to junior college first. Then he got admitted into Notre Dame. And he walked on to play football. Unfortunately, he got on the practice squad where you get the brains beat out of you. But he stayed the course. His senior year, or his junior year, he goes before the coach and says, listen, my dad said I would never make this team. I would never play on that field. Coach, you got to promise me my senior year, next year, I can play in one game. and the coach promises him one game. That summer, the coach leaves the team, and a new coach comes, and Rudy's heart taken out of him. Along the way, other players come to the new coach and said, "You got to let him play." They begin to offer up their uniforms, giving mine in. "I want Rudy's play." End of the movie ends up when he gets in, the last couple of plays of the game, his dad is there, his mom's there, his brothers and sisters and wives and friends are all there, and the whole stadium is yelling out, "Rudy!" And he ends up getting carried off the field. It's a story of Ruth. It's the story of Boaz. They come up against hard times, but they believe that they see the hand of God moving and they respond. In your life, there may be some tough times going on, but you need to respond when you sense it's the hand of God. It's the voice of God. Chapter 4 opens up. Boaz went up to the gate and he there. It probably was still early. And behold, the close relative of whom Boaz had spoken came by. Again, the providence of God. The gate was the courthouse. It was a place where everybody went to take on official business. It was our Walmart. If you go to Walmart, you stay there long enough, you're going to see somebody you know, right? If you go there, stay long enough, everybody cycles through Walmart. Well, everybody cycled through the gate. Boaz knew sooner or later that next of kin would come by. Luck? I don't think so. I'm still buying into the providence, the unseen hand of God working. He sees the close relative in verse 1. Boaz has spoken, came by. So Boaz says, "Come aside, friend, sit down here." So he came aside and he sat down. He took 10 men of the elders of the city. It was called the courthouse. 10 elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. So what happens is that Boaz explains to this nearest kinsman redeemer, "Here is someone you can have. You get the land." And he's like, "That's a good deal. I think I'll take her." And then Boaz says, "And when she has your child, you're going to have to split that inheritance with the rest of your family." Verse 4, "I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants and the elders of the people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not redeem it, then tell me that I may know. For there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am next after you." And he said, "I will redeem it." Oh, are you kidding me? You can leave the rest of the book out. He's going to redeem her. Until verse 5, Boaz says, "On the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance." And the close relative said, "I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to share what I already have with a stranger. I'm going to keep it for myself." Verse 6. "I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. You redeem it. You redeem my right of redemption for yourself, for I cannot redeem it." Boaz is like, "Yeah, I knew this would work." This was the custom. It gets stranger here. And this was the custom for former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. They had just made a contract with witnesses, and they made this redeeming and exchanging to confirm anything It wasn't a handshake. It wasn't writing on your name on a contract. Here's what it was. One man took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was a confirmation in Israel. You just take the other guy's sandal, put it in your hip pocket, go, it's a done deal. Strange, isn't it? A sandal. Verse 8, therefore the close relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself. So he took off his sandal. And Boaz said to the elders, the witnesses, the people, you're witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's from the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth, the Moabitess, the widow, I've acquired as my wife. End of story. Oh, not yet. There's another takeaway for us. We need to understand when we get a problem, we don't need to put it on the back burner and let it sit there. When a problem arises in our life, Boaz did exactly what we should do. Deal with it. Especially if it's a spiritual problem. If there's the voice of God speaking to you, perhaps dealing with you about your salvation, don't put it off. If there's a particular sin that the Lord is dealing with you about, the worst thing you can do is kick it down the road. Put it on your calendar for not going away, and most of the time, it just gets worse. We need to learn to deal with our problems quickly. And the last thing is that we need to understand God will work the impossible out. The thing that you think can never happen, your dream, your hope, there's too many obstacles in the way. Read the book of Ruth. You'll be convinced that God works things out. Matter of fact, in the New Testament book of Romans, it says, we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. God has a plan for you, and he can take the roadblocks out of your way. Don't stop just because there is an obstacle. I want to drop down to verse 17 before I finish. Verse 17 says, also the neighbor woman gave him a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. He's the father of Jesse, the father of David. You take this woman out of the country of Moab, and you drop her into the family tree, not just of David, but ultimately Jesus Christ. Matthew gives us the genealogy in chapter 1. Solomon begot Boaz by Rahab. Boaz begot Obed by Ruth. Obed begot Jesse. And Jesse begot David the king. And down in Matthew chapter 1 verse 16, and Jacob begot Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who was called Christ. You think you've done some things that have ruled you out of God's blessing? You better think again. You think that what the devil says about you, you could never do this. You don't have that talent. You don't have that skill. You don't have that ability. You better think again. Here is Ruth, of all people, coming out of a foreign nation that God allows to be in the blood line of his son, Jesus Christ. A miracle. The impossible. It blows our mind. This morning, if God's dealing with you, maybe it's about your salvation. You're not sure if you were to die today, where you would spend the rest of your eternity, because you're going to spend it somewhere. If you're not sure where that is, if you're not sure it is heaven, you need to deal with that. Listen to the Holy Spirit today. If Satan has told you time and time again, there is no place for you in this kingdom. There is no place for you. You have ruined it. You have taken yourself out of the possibility of God ever using you. You just need to remember Ruth. You need to surrender the life that God has given to you and give it to Him and let Him rule and reign. Let's bow our heads and go to the Lord in prayer. A story this morning, not necessarily a sermon. Something that we can read collectively from the book of Ruth. But there are some lessons for you. God may be dealing with you right now. You need to respond. You may see a situation in front of you and you just kind of rule it out as impossible. Oh no, God can use you. God can take the broken pieces of your life, put it back together, and make you a diamond. He's capable, He's able to do that very thing. We're going to have a word of prayer in just a few moments. I'm going to pray, then there'll be a verse or two of invitation chorus. And while that music is playing, we invite you to come. There'll be people up here who can have prayer with you. If you have questions, we can attempt to answer them, help you as we possibly can. You need a church home, you need a place to hang your hat, we would love to welcome you here. Let's all stand and go to the Lord in prayer. Father, we bow before your presence. We humbly ask you today to speak into our hearts the things we need to hear. Encourage those that are discouraged. Lift up those that have been knocked down. I pray that you would put hope, courage in the life of each and every one of us here today. It's in Jesus' name. Amen. While the music plays, we invite you to come.